Well, I am so excited. Patrice McCormick is here today. She's one of my favorite teachers. I just love her enthusiasm for God. I think God has taught her a lot in her life, and she's always learning more things, and I don't know. It's fun to be around you. So, I always like to share this about her because I think all parents appreciate it, that when her sons were four, one boy was four, the other one was 2.5, then she had twin girls. So 4 kids under the age of 4. So just to appreciate what she's been through, she's got some parenting experience. She's also a home church leader. She's been a home church leader for over 25 years. And she teaches the Christian growth class. So if that's one of your New Year's resolutions to learn more about the Bible, grow spiritually, her class starts Saturday, and there's childcare and breakfast, or donuts and coffee.
Breakfast and coffee, our class only.
Yeah, special treatment in Patrice's class. So, that's a great class on Saturday. So today she's going to talk about what's negotiable and what's not. So what are those things we need to draw the battle lines on, and what are the things we need to ease up and not be so controlling over? So we're going to talk about that. And I also want to note that next time, Bev DeLashman will be here to talk about discipline with grace. We can always use input on discipline, you know, for sure. So get the word out that that's next time. The flyer says October, but it is next time in February. All right? Come on up.
Thank you, Kim. They're now a lot older. Our oldest will turn 24, Luke is 22, and Megan and Katie will be 20 in April. So we can survive, and someday you will all have people out of the house, hopefully. So, okay, how about if I pray, and then we're going to get started? Yeah. Well, Lord, we thank you that you have never called us to do this parenting thing alone, that you've given us your Spirit, and you've given us each other, and you've given us a community to live it out in, Lord. So we're so grateful for that, and I'm so grateful that you love our kids more than we do, that you care for them, and you're at work through our imperfect efforts to help these kids come to know you and want to serve you. So, Lord, I pray, please speak through me, but more importantly, Lord, please use questions and comments and discussion to get everything out that you want us to consider here this morning. Amen. Well, first of all, thanks for coming out. The topic is helping our children learn to be flexible. And as I thought about this over the years, I felt like there were some areas that Mike and I did well when it came to being flexible. I think some of you know about my one son's famous haircut or lack of. I was trying to find a picture of it. I think he went for almost like 2 years without ever brushing his hair. And so it got to be this, it was like one big dread. And so when he would itch his head, like his whole hair would move. And so we didn't fight. Every time we tried to do this hair thing, it became a huge battle. And our friendship with him was more important than what his hair looked like. But it was hard because we'd go into one time we took him to the orthodontist office. And so when he stood up to walk in, I watched this little girl beside me, and she's watching him go. And so he comes in and he does this. And when he came back out, I'm not joking, the little girl's going, and walks him. And so what was I thinking? What do people think of me as a parent? I must be a bad parent because my child doesn't brush his hair, right? Or our sons, until they were sophomore in high school, they never wore pants. So it could be as cold as it was out there, and they would wear gym shorts and a hoodie. And they were old, and I'm like, well, when you get cold enough, you'll probably put on a pair of pants. And again, I wonder what people think. I must be a bad parent because I'm not buying my kid a winter coat. So, and then I realized there was other areas that we were flexible, but my motives were not good. And we'll talk about those too. So, what's it mean for kids to be flexible? I'm not talking about giving in to every whim or letting them have whatever they want. But when we talk about our kids being flexible, I'm talking about the definition of flexible was the capable of being bent, yielding to an influence, adaptable, resilient, resourceful. Then I started making up my own definition up there. Able to go with the flow, right? A kid who is flexible, that they don't have to, the opposite of that is rigid, inflexible, unyielding. So, this is the kid that when plans change, they're as kids are, they're quite disappointed, right? But they're not devastated. They're not, well, we all know what happens when our own plans get thrown off, how we respond in our hearts, right? And sometimes outwardly. But we know very quickly what goes on with our kids when the favorite TV show somehow, it's not on air and they go nuts. And so we understand it. But we want our kids to be able to, when things don't go their way, when they can't find their favorite pair of tennis shoes, the whole world's not going to pay for it, right? We've all had those experiences when we realized our kids are getting inflexible. Now, both of those, both our kids being flexible has value, and our kids being inflexible, and that and we being inflexible, both have value, right? Right, because give me some areas where you know you need to be inflexible, that you got to hold fast because it's small enough that you guys, and just you have to yell it because I'm not going to make everybody run around, but we're small enough here and close enough. So give me some areas that you know where you need to hold firm, that you cannot cave in to your kids' demands.
I don't want to go to school
today. Right, oh yeah. And every parent's going, oh yeah, you are going to school today because we've had a nice long break. You will go to school. I don't care if you got a fever. I don't care if you're throwing up. We're going to school today, right? So there's some responsibilities in life that age appropriate that you can't cave on. You can't, if the kid says, I don't want to go to school today, you can't say, oh, okay, Billy, I guess so. All right, well, just to help. No, you're like, no, you got to go to school. So those kind of responsibilities. Moral issues. Yeah, so we'll talk more about those. So we know there are certain areas that as a parent we've got to hold firm on or it's not going to go well. But we also understand that there are some areas where our kids need to learn to be flexible, and we're going to talk about those. And so we know that both of these principles have great value given the right context. And we'll talk more about that later on, like what are some things that I think through. Because when it comes to something like this, we would all, like in anything in parenting, we'd all like a nice magic 10 steps, right? I do this in this case, this in that case, and then this in this case. And as we know, it's not like that, right? Don't you wish to God it was sometimes? Just give me that email with those 10 steps and I'd be happy. But most parenting is not like that. And this is another area. And so this morning, I'm just going to mostly raise things to think about. There's no clear-cut answers, but some things to think about. And so I found this quote on the internet, and of course then I couldn't find it again, so I couldn't give you the site. But this is how this one parent figured out her kids were not flexible. She said, I need to put my kids' carrots on a separate plate or they're gonna cry. My kids will cry if they have bananas on their PB&J. We should definitely go on a hike. Just be prepared because my kids are going to cry because it's cold. And so it continued during our 4 days at the cabin in Tennessee. We had an incredible time, but I found myself saying, my kids are going to cry, so many times that I joked that we should keep a running tally. As we made the long drive home, I thought about our time at the cabin and how our friends' kids seemed to be so much more flexible than our kids. And I don't usually compare our family to other families, but being flexible is one of our self-proclaimed family values. And in that moment, I realized that we were failing miserably at teaching our kids to be flexible. I always buy them the exact kind of peanut butter they like and just the right toothpaste and on and on and on. And so I think, at least I sure had, these aha moments where you thought, what am I doing? Why am I making 3 different meals for 4 different people because one kid doesn't like this and one kid doesn't like that? I thought, what? I'm out of my mind. Here's a 4-year-old dictating what I'm going to fix for dinner. That is just stupid. And so I would imagine we all have those aha kind of moments, right? Or you have 20 minutes looking for that favorite pair of tennis shoes where everybody else is dressed. You got your coat on. You're ready to go. But you can't find Billy's favorite. You're thinking, what am I doing? Here, put these shoes on. They're perfectly good shoes. Now let's go, right? So we have these moments where we realize, I need to work on this thing where my kids don't always have to have it just their way. It doesn't have to be just the way it's supposed to be, right? And so, but when you're going to try to teach your kids to be flexible, that doesn't have to be just like this, what are some of the costs you will pay as you try to teach your child a little bit of flexibility in the kind of shoes they wear or what they're going to eat today or the snack they're going to have? Give me some real-life examples of what happens when you're saying, oh, we don't have that for a snack. We got peanut butter and crackers. It's either that or nothing. And then what do they say? Oh, Mom, that's okay. I know you're just trying to help me to be flexible. Okay, this is great. I really like this, Mom. What do? Wine. Oh, come on now. Come on. We should have fun this morning. You've got to laugh at yourself as a parent or you're going to have a hard time making it, right? So they whine. And they're not here, so we can, you know, a little fun at their expense. Never hurt them, right? So they whine, freak out, make you pay. How do they make us pay? By whining, freaking out, being stubborn. I just won't eat. Oh, you don't love me. If you love me, you would give me the right kind of snacks. You must not love me. So there will be a cost, right? And then there's also the time where they freak out in public, too, right? There's the cost, too. What will these people think of me as my child is going nuts in the grocery? How many of us said, my child would never do that in the grocery store? And then you got to the grocery store and they did the exact same thing you said my child would never do. You learn very quickly in the grocery store never to say, my child would never do that. So it's costly. There'll be a cost in this area, like in anything with parenting, right? There's going to be a cost. There'll be a cost. So I just want to go through and just spend a little bit of time. Why should our children learn to be flexible? Because if we aren't convinced that this is a valuable thing to try to instill in our children, we're going to quit. We're going to cave in to the whining, the demanding, the infantile fits, the stubbornness. However it's manifested, crying, stomp, however it's manifested in your kid. I mean, again, kids are just like we are, but they just don't hide it as well as we do. And so as I'm talking about why our kids should be flexible, it also applies to us, right? And so one of the reasons, one of the key reasons, we want our kids to learn to be flexible, that they don't always have to have their way, that life doesn't always have to go as I've planned. It's not an accurate view of the world. It's not an accurate, and again, we'll talk about this more, but the world doesn't always go as the way we've planned it, right? It doesn't go the way we've planned it in terms of the grand life decisions, the grand life scale, right? People get sick, people lose jobs, marriages break up, and so the life does not go the way we think it should be and the way we would like it to. And so life doesn't go the way we would like it on this grand scale, and it doesn't go often, especially if you're a parent of young children, it doesn't go often day to day the way you've had planned, right? Yeah, at 8 o'clock, very rarely is a parent of young children, like 8 o'clock we'll do this, at 10:30 it will do this, at 11:07 we'll do this, and how many of you have tried that? And what does that guarantee? Anger, frustration. That's usually some crying and snot flying by the time that day's done. And so we understand day to day the car breaks down and your plans to go to the zoo don't work out. You went to the grocery store and forgot that two key ingredients to make the thing you'd promised that you'd make and now you can't make it. Kids get sick, and I remember one parent finally was getting ready to go out. She was so excited. She had a white sweater. She held her kid up, and the kid puked like pink stuff all down her white sweater. And so her evening wasn't going as she had planned, right? And so if we allow our kids always to have their way, to always live in their nice little predictable rigid world, we're doing them a disservice, because they're going to eventually wake up one day and realize this is not the way the world is. Other people are not going to treat me the way my mom and dad did, that always let me have my way. And so there's going to be a harsh, we have not done an adequate job of preparing them to help them understand the world is broken and that things will not go as planned. And again, you know, I'm not advocating that we purposely distort and screw up our kids' day from the morning they get up. We don't have to do that. Life itself will do that, right? There'll be enough disappointments, frustrations, interruptions of plans by the mere fact we live in this world. And the question is, how am I going to respond to it? And how will my kids respond to it? How can I help my kids get prepared to realize that the world doesn't revolve around them? And so I think it's so important to help our kids understand this is a broken world we live in, and we'll probably experience some reflection of it today. Now, the other thing that I think is really important, if we don't help our kids learn to be flexible, they don't have an accurate view of themselves. And what I mean in here, again, if their world is always predict, and again, I'm not saying never, you know what I'm saying, but if the world is always predictable, it always goes the way I have planned, I'm never required to press on a little bit more, they end up feeling, they don't realize that they can do more than they think they can, right? And so, I mean, how do we learn we can do more than we think we can? It's when life doesn't go the way we have planned, when all these crazy things are thrown in, you're like, wow, I can stay up longer than I can. And so there'll be times where the kids won't get to eat their lunch right when they want to eat lunch, or they won't get their naps right when you know they need to get a nap. But that's when you can come alongside and say, I'm hungry too. But boy, it was really important that we stayed and talked to Miss So-and-so another 10 minutes because she was really, really sad. But you know what? God, you know what? You can do it. I'm hungry too, but boy, we're going to get home and we'll have plenty to eat. Now, again, is the kid going to say, okay, Mom, I'm so glad here's an opportunity for me to learn more than what I think I can do? No, they're probably going to be grumpy, whiny. But you come alongside, you encourage. And then when they finally get home, then when they finally eat lunch, you say, look, we survived. We were mildly hungry for 10 minutes, and we made it. Oh, you were tired. I'm tired. I'm tired of you, but we're tired. Yes, and now we're going to get our rest. We did it. We can do it. You can do it. Come on now. And again, don't, at least in my experience, you read some of those Christian parenting books, and it makes it sound like, oh, if you say this, and then your little kid will just come along and say this, and it'll be beautiful and marvelous. It never worked like that ever, hardly ever in our parenting experience. They would be fussy, whiny, but then over time, and as adults, you see this. I remember one time we got to go to Oregon with our four kids, and they were still, I don't know how old they were, but we encouraged them and implored, and we went up this mountain to hike so we could see this beautiful view of this waterfall. So we all hike up there, and they're grumbling, and we get to the top. We're like, oh, well, look at this beautiful view, and we go look out, and all there was the parking lot. We're like, oh. So we still laugh about it, but they did more than they thought they could do. They climbed up the mountain. And so again, our job is to help them because they had their plans. We saw that waterfall. That's enough. Let's get back in the car. And we're like, oh, no, let's go for a hike. And so, but they did more than they thought. And so think of it that way. You can, Billy, Sally, Rosie, whatever, you can do more than you think you can. But if we never get them in a position of age-appropriate stress, disruption of plans, frustrations, uncertainties, how will they ever know? How will they ever know? If you have questions as I'm going along, please feel free to stop, okay? But more importantly than this accurate view of themselves, if they never are in any uncertainty, any disappointment, they end up with an inaccurate view of God. Again, if our life always goes just as planned, just as we've designed, just as we hoped, how often do we turn to God? Almost never, right? Because we got a plan, it's all good, life's great, and we tip our hats off to Jesus. So When our kids are in uncomfortable situations, when unknown uncertainties, yeah, I know we were going to go to the zoo today, but, you know, grandma really needs help, and so we're going to go do that, and then maybe we're going to get to go to the zoo today. You all have had these kind of situations. You know what I'm talking about. But this is when we can help them say, but you know what? God will help us be patient. And if this is an interruption God's given us, I bet you he's got something good in store. And so as our kids have to deal with these things, it gives us the opportunity to turn them towards God. I got to hear a teaching by Kim's brother, Tom, years ago. And he taught on this idea how God often interrupts our plans because he has something else in mind. And that's the way he works in our lives. That's the way he's going to work in our kids' life. And I just wanted to look Tom makes the point in this teaching that when you read through the Bible, often the phrase is, they were reclining, they were going here, they were doing this, and then God would bring along a need, like a lame man, a blind man, and then they would set aside whatever they had planned to do, and it was really good stuff, and then they would do, they would pursue this interruption. And I just, and this one is just, I find so striking, because these guys, in context, the apostles, who were the followers of Christ, you know, the 12 dudes, they had just been out on this, like this preaching, teaching mission. So they had done something really pretty cool, and they were pretty tired, and Jesus' cousin John had just been beheaded, so they had some pretty great needs, right? And so, and we'll go ahead and read this. He says, the apostles gathered together with Jesus, and they reported to him all that they had done and taught. So they're like, oh man, we healed people. So they're just getting warmed up. And so Christ says to them, come away by yourselves to a secluded place and rest a while. For there were many people coming and going, and they didn't even have time to eat. So they went away in a boat to a secluded place by themselves. The people saw them going, and many recognized them and ran there together on foot from all the cities and got there ahead of them. When Jesus went ashore, he saw a large crowd, and he felt compassion for them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. When it was already quite late, his disciples came to him and said, this place is desolate and is already quite late. Send them away so that they may go into the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat. But he answered them, you give them something to eat. And they said to him, shall we go and spend 200 denarii on bread and give them something to eat? And he said to them, how many loaves do you have? Go, look. And when they found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. And he commanded them all to sit down by the groups on the green grass. They sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties, and he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up towards heaven, he blessed the food and broke the loaves, and he kept giving them to the disciples to set before them, and divided all up the tow fish among them. They ate and were satisfied, and they picked up 12 full baskets of the broken pieces and also of the fish. There were 5,000 men who ate the loaves. So, it's obvious Christ and the apostles had something planned. They were getting out of town. It was a well-deserved rest, right? So here comes this interruption. All these people want to, and so I know how I would have responded. Hurry, let's hurry up and go behind the trees. Maybe they won't see us. We can still get away. Or let's do some of our little religious duty. We'll say hi to them, and then we can sneak away, and then we can get what we want, right? Anybody else? Oh, you guys would all say, oh, no, here's a lovely opportunity to trust Jesus. This will be great, right? But think of it this way. What would the disciples have missed if they would have chosen not to be flexible and follow this interruption? Be colorful. What would they have missed? What do we miss? When God says, look, here's an interruption, dummy. Would you go follow me here? And I say, oh no, I'm too busy doing my little thing here. But what did they miss? They missed a miracle. God took two little fish and fed 5,000. They missed the glory of God. My God, can you imagine how? What if only 11 of them went, one didn't? Can you imagine the 11 going back to the 12 saying, "Oh, Peter, you won't believe what you missed. Oh, it was incredible. And it was I did more than we thought. We fed 5,000. God worked through us. It was grand." And so when we, now I doubt, well, I haven't heard of anybody yet having quite a miracle quite like that, where you fed 5,000 with your child. I haven't heard anything like that. But think in your own life. What do my kids miss? What do I miss? When God comes along and says, "I have a different plan. You're not going to do this today. I've got this in mind." Yes, I know it seems crushing that we can't do whatever we plan, that we can't bake cookies or whatever. But there's this need here, and I want to work through you and your child to meet this need. And it's going to be greater and more glorious than you can anticipate. What if we had that mentality when the kid's screaming about what pair of shoes he's going to have on? Like, no, I don't, Mike, I want you to learn to be able to be flexible so that when the Lord calls upon you to do this or to come here, that you're more willing to do that. And so, again, at least for me, I had to think through this stuff as I am in the middle of a bloody war with one of the kids over something that I needed to remain firm on, or where I needed to back off and say, "It's not that big of a deal," or, "You need to learn it's not that big of a deal." And so I had, and I still to this day, as a parenting adult children, or whatever the heck the fancy term is, my sin tendencies still come out with my kids. I like to rescue. I like to be in control. I like to function. So I have to think through even these principles today and back up and say, no, they've got to learn that the world is broken. They've got to learn that they have, that God has given them the resources to deal with this curveball. I wish to God that I saw so clearly back then. I see much more clearly now. And so even to this day, these are the kind of things I've got to think through as I see my kids struggling, or as I see an uncertainty in their life where I want to come along and say, "Well, I'll email them for you." And I'm like, what the world? I'm not going to swear, Sharon. What the world am I doing? They need to email. They need to do this. And so we got to keep coming back to things like this. We feel like there's a part of us that just wants to go rescue, right? Just fix it. Just make it better. So think through those principles as you're thinking through, how can I help my kid to learn to be flexible? And it's worth this short-term pain because of the long-term gain. Now, practical. Well, then just tell me, where do I need to learn to be firm? Where should I be flexible? And we can go have more coffee and call it a morning. And we can go home and get warm again. It's not like that, right? It is not like that. And so I thought about, what are some principles to consider? As you're thinking through a situation, is this an area where I need to lighten up? Or is this an area where I really need to figuratively duke it out with my kid and put up with the whining and help them learn to be flexible? Or is this an area where I need to hold firm and my kid's got to learn that this is a non-negotiable? And so some of the things that came up earlier, there are moral issues, there are character issues that we've got to stand firm on. My daughters know of a young mother, and I think this was so great what she did. Her kid took a library book and ripped the pages out. So she marched the kid to the librarian, and the little kid had to go apologize to the librarian. "I am so sorry. I ripped the pages out of your book." So those kind of things we've got. You know, your kid goes off and slugs another kid. I mean, the other kid could very well be a brat, and sorry to you thinking, "God, I'm glad someone slugged that little kid." But you still got to take little Billy up there and say, "Billy, you got to apologize. I don't want to apologize." Well, then I guess we're going to be sitting here a long time till you finally apologize. So there are these character issues, these moral issues, lying, kindness, using kind words. You guys, there's already been teachings on that too, and there'll be more. And you know, you're going to go to God's word. and what God emphasizes. Those are the things that we hold firm on. Those are the fights we're willing to have for our kids to learn to be polite. You know, they come to a certain age where they need to say thank you for the person who hosted them, that spent the evening to prepare a meal for them. And even if they didn't like it, the kids got to learn to say thank you. Look somebody, you know, look them in the eye. You guys are doing this, right? You got to look them in the eye and say, thank you, Miss Kim, for the meal, right? I don't want to. Well, I guess we're going to be here a long time. Do you finally say thank you to Miss Kim? So we understand that. And it's hard because it'd be a lot easier to say, oh, that's okay, next time. Like, So there's those kind of areas that you need to think through as you think through, is this an area where I need to have my kid learn to be flexible? Is this an area that I need to hold my kid firm to it? The needs of others, as you're thinking about, is this an area where my kid could be flexible? Or is this an area where it's one of those areas it's no big deal? And as I thought about it, you know, our kids would whine about meals. And I thought, well, is this okay? And I thought, well, no, it's not okay. They need to be grateful for their food. And so I remember one time we told the kids, you can't whine anymore, and the next person who whines, we're throwing your food away, and you'll get nothing to eat. We only had to do that once. And it was all age appropriate when they're like 2 years old or something. It was all age appropriate. They knew what they were doing. We did it once, and I wish we would have had a picture of the other three kids' eyes as I took that plate of food and said, well, I guess you're not eating, are you? Oh, like, no, this isn't an area. You're going to have to learn to eat whatever we have and be grateful for it. So, again, why should we wait 20 minutes for one kid to find a pair of shoes when he has a lovely pair right there, and he is interrupting and disrupting everybody else's life? No, you can get another pair. It's bloody. It'll be a fight, right? Any of that? Yeah. You're like, you know what I'm talking about? Right. Oh, yeah. So that would be something else to consider. Does my kid need to learn to be flexible here? Because there's a lot of other people's whose needs are being impacted. Obviously, the age and the child's temperament, right? There's some things with certain kids that you don't have to worry about, and you can. There's a lot of wiggle room for them. Our one child tends to. I'm trying to think of a nice way to say it. He has trouble with follow through, and I realized. And then we have other children who have no problem with follow through, and I realized I should have forced this one. I should have been more firm and required this one to definitely follow through more when he was younger than what we did, but I'm like, no big deal. Or the other ones, they didn't require the same amount of regiment and requiring them to follow through. I could allow them to be more flexible in this area. And so your kid's age, what's an age-appropriate stress that they should be able to handle? We're really kind of screwed up in this area in a lot of ways. You know, we might pack up our kids and move to a completely different city, a completely different area to advance in a job career. And we say our kids need to be resilient. But yet when it comes to changing a pair of tennis shoes or a different pair of jeans, we get all freaked out and say, oh, but Billy will be upset if I make him wear the blue pants instead of the red pants. It's something to think about. It's something to think about. Where we want our kids to be, where we assume our kids will be resilient over things that probably are not in their framework to be resilient about. And then those areas where they are quite capable and it would be good for them, we cave in. And so lastly, when you think about helping our kids learn to be flexible, we have to know our own temperament. Again, as I review my own parenting, I realize I wish I would have been more suspicious of my temperament. I like to have fun. I don't like follow through with discipline. It's way a lot of work. It's kind of boring. It's routine. chores. Who wants to force kids to do chores? So I'd let them be flexible over chores. They wouldn't want to do them. Like, I'd fight a little bit, then I'm like, oh yeah, I'll just do the dishes myself. And so I allowed them to be flexible with their chores. And was that good? No. No. And I realized my temperament was influencing what I was going to challenge my kids on to be flexible, what I would challenge my kids on to follow through and to say, no, this is a non-negotiable. And so I realized, as I think through, where are we going to be flexible, where won't we be flexible, our own temperament, our own sin tendency is going to influence this also. And so know your weak, be aware of where you go on this. And have a healthy suspicion of your own tendencies. And think this through. And so this is getting to be the last point. What you're flexible about with your kids, what you encourage them to be flexible about, what you're inflexible with your kids, it's going to communicate something to your children. It communicates what you value. If you are not flexible with what they wear, if you're not flexible with their outward appearance, what do we communicate to our kids? That's the most important thing, right? Often that's what's communicated. You must wear these things so that you look nice. So what do our kids end up thinking? Oh, so that's what's important. And so you have to think through the whys. Why am I holding on to this? Why am I demanding my child be flexible in this area, but now I'm demanding or I'm holding to this rigidity in another area? And I think this is probably the most difficult and the most painful thing to do when it comes to parenting, right? Because often when I asked myself why, I didn't like the answer. Why I was doing what I was doing. And I think apart from knowing Christ, it's almost impossible. Because as a parent, it's so easy that who we are and what we are is tied to how we think we're parenting, right? If we have a good day and Billy is polite and Sally obeys, what do we think? I'm a good parent. I'm a good person. Jesus must love me more, right? And then when Billy throws a fit, when he kicks the other kid, grabs the toy, the teachers are like, oh, what do we think then? Oh, come on now, what are you thinking then? I'm a bad parent. I'm a bad person. Oh, God must love me less. Right? It's because we love him so much and we've invested so much. It's so easy to think like that. And if our value, our sense of who we are is tied to that, it's really difficult to objectively, as much as possible, begin to look at the motive of why we do. That's why Christ becomes so important in parenting, because who we are and what we do ultimately is not the issue before God, right? The issue before God is whether or not we've asked Christ to pay for our sins, to bridge that gap, because in any area like parenting, you're clearly aware of where you failed, right? And what you've done wrong. And we think, well, if I just try harder. But God's saying, well, you don't understand. Your failures with parenting is just sort of like the whole pool of failures and your violation of my moral character. And that there's a problem between me and I have a problem. God's saying, I have a problem with you guys. You've sinned. You've violated my moral character. And so there's this huge gap. But God said, I'll send Christ, who will live a perfect life. He'll die on the cross to pay for all your sins. That if you're willing to ask Christ to pay for those sins and have, in a sense, the blood of Christ cover you, that when I look at you, I'll look at you as if I'm looking through Christ. And Christ never did anything wrong. And so when God looks at you, if you've asked Christ to pay for your sins on your worst parenting day ever, think about that. How many times you yelled and screamed? he still sees you holy and blameless without a single fault because he's looking at you through Christ. And so on your worst parenting day ever, God still sees you holy and blameless without a single fault. And on your best parenting day ever, he still looks at you the same. Your performance as a parent, once you come into this right relationship with God, with Christ, is not influenced on whether you have a good day, bad day, scream, patient, yell, talk behind their, nothing. Because it's secure. Because God's love for you is rooted in what Christ has done. And the more that becomes real, the more honest you can be with yourself and with other people and with your kids, why we do some of the stupid stuff we do as parents. Right? Haven't you been in the midst of a fight with a kid over what color the plate is? And all of a sudden you have this reality, what am I doing? I must be out of my mind. And what do you have to do? Sally, I am so sorry. I have lost my mind. I'm fighting over this purple plate. That is about the dumbest thing ever. I have said really mean things. I am so, so sorry, right? Apart from Christ, that's really, really hard to do. Apart from understanding that my value is not tied to my performance, my value is that I am a child of God, loved and valued and esteemed. I am his adopted child. Apart from that knowledge, I think it's super hard, almost impossible, to be able to be honest, to begin to evaluate and ask yourselves, why am I demanding my kid be rigid in this area? Why am I allowing flexibility in this area? What is going on? And this is the, I think this for me is the hardest thing to do. I can say, no, I need to do this or that, but it's short-lived until I begin to deal with why. Why? Now, obviously, why would I want my kid to learn to be flexible in this area? It's for the child's best interest. And we say that, and you know, it almost goes without saying, but it's really hard, right? Because there's so many other things inside of me that's going on. And so when we think about why I want my kid to be flexible, it's because we know what we want them to look like when they're 30 years old, right? We don't want them to be rigid, unyielding, inflexible, a pain and you know what, right? We see that in ourselves and we have to interact with people who are like that. How many people like to work with somebody like that? How many like to be really good friends with somebody who is unyielding and inflexible and always have to have their way? Oh, nobody there either, right? And so we know what we want our kids to be like. We want them to be able to follow wherever the Lord leads. We want them not to always have to have everything in order. Well, if that's what we want, we got to start now. Little steps. You know, the same lady that I found the thing where she said, you know, no bananas on the peanut butter and jelly sandwich. She said, we've made small steps. My kid finally ate peanut butter and crackers for a snack when there was nothing else left to eat. She said, and he finally wore a pair of different shoes. Small steps. Small steps. And will we fail? Oh, good Lord, yes. But maybe just one time. One time this week, right? That's where we go back and realize God loves my kids more than I do. And God, in his mercy and his crazy sense, somehow entrusted these kids to my care. He must have been out of his mind, but he has. So you keep coming back to that. And so, do we become... And this is probably going back to our own mentality. But do we become inflexible, or we're demanding our kids to be a certain way because now it's an issue I want to win, right? You will wear gloves outside to go play in the snow in our yard, but I don't want to. Yes, you will, right? Anybody else happen to that? And you're fighting over some stupid thing, and it's no longer what's really good for the kid, but I'm going to win this fight. I'm gonna win. And how productive is that? Right, I got a couple smiles because hopefully you probably did it in the last couple days. So, is that the thing? Is there something going on that there's now become I want to win? How about this one? I am going to be in control. And so I'm going to demand the kid does this. Or I will, right. I mean, again, parenting is probably one of those things that make us feel most insecure because we're not in control. And so sometimes I think we become rigid over things because that makes me feel like I'm in control. And if I'm in control, therefore I'm a good parent. But there's so little things. And so think, am I being rigid in this area? Am I not allowing my child some flexibility here because I want to look a certain way? I want my kid to look a certain way? The refusal to be sacrificial, and that kind of goes back to our own personal temperaments. I was talking to Yvonne Tobin, and she said she saw this as she thinks through her own parenting. There'd be time that the kids were fighting, and so that would be a time to be rigid and go in and wade in there with the fights and make them deal with what's going on. Let's talk this through. But she said, I'd realize I'd be having a dinner party, and I was already late. And so what I do, I'd say instead of going in and dealing with it, what's going on, this would be an area where we're not going to allow the kids to be flexible and meet the crap out of each other. She said, I just put a movie in. Like, okay, you guys watch the movie so I can keep doing what I want to do. And so sometimes we will require our kids to be rigid in areas that really aren't important because I don't want to deal with them. I don't want to have to get in there and muck it up with them, right? I didn't want to hold my kids to doing chores because I found it really boring, and I'd feel much better about myself if I could function and mark some things off my list. And so I realized that my concept of where I could encourage my kids to be flexible, where I needed my kids to be, to follow through, to finish a task, I didn't want to deal with it. And so I dropped the ball there frequently. And then the last one, to think through is what do we make our kids in terms, where do we allow our kids to be flexible? Where do we encourage them to be flexible? I think it really, if we're not careful, we are very much influenced by our culture's definition of a good parent. You know, when you think about what does a good parent do? Well, a good parent provides every opportunity for their child. That provides, you know, like the best schools, the best clothes, the best food, the best this, the best opportunities, and it goes on and on and on. And when we're not careful, when we think about, I want to be a good parent, we allow our culture to define what it means to be a good parent. And so as they get older, what we find is all of a sudden I become rigid with their kid, with your kid's practice schedule, but their commitment maybe to a Bible study becomes optional. And so this Bible study better work around my kid's soccer thing or my kid's gymnastic thing, because if it doesn't, the Bible study is going to get jettisoned so that my kid can continue to perform well or acquire more skills or be smarter or be prettier. You know, my kid has to look really, really pretty, so I require that he or she wears nice clothes and become inflexible on that. And so, again, we've got to think through, what does the Bible say a good parent is? I think, is it Micah 6:8? What does the Lord require of us? To love, we sing it down at the 4th Street, right? To love justice and mercy and walk humbly with our God. God says that's what he says, this is what I want you to come alongside this kid that I've entrusted to your care. These are the goals I want you to think about as you parent your child. As you think about it, as that is this broad goal, then that begins to influence where do I encourage my child to be flexible? Help me to help him set aside his little plan today so that we could love somebody else, so that we could serve somebody today. You know, Lord, help me learn to them to realize to be grateful for what we have so that he's freer to try other things. And so as you think about what's this long term, what does God say a good parent is, it begins to influence on what we are encouraging our kids to be flexible about, what we're going to hold our kids firm to. You know, I have a bunch of different practical ideas, but the two I think are the most important ones is ask others for input. People who know you and your kids well and that will be honest with you. And when they ask you, do you think I'm being way too rigid on this? They'll say yes. If they ask you, do you think I'm being way too inflexible on this? And they say, yeah, listen to them, talk about it. How did you handle this situation? I was really fortunate. I had a good friend whose all her kids were all, her youngest was older than my oldest. And I can remember we would hang out and I would ask her, what did you do in this situation? How did you handle that situation? What did you do when they said that? And then the blah, 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 blah. And I stole so many ideas from her. But I would ask her, and I remember one time I said something about, oh, I did spank them. And something about it didn't really hurt. And she said, well, why was that? And, you know, if you're going to spank, you better make it hurt. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So ask other people, and especially if you're fortunate to have other people whose kids, that they've gone through it before you, because we get so close to the situation and our own tendencies. And then the other ones, you could talk to your kids about and all that kind of crap, but the last one is talk to your kids about your own challenges with God and his own, we do have a fair amount of people that come through our house. And so we would invite people over for dinner, and before you know it, we'd have like four more. And so I used to get a lot more uptight about it than I do now. And so I'd talk about it, I'm like, oh my gosh, we're not going to have enough food. And then afterwards, there'd always be plenty of food. And so I could tell, I'd like, can you believe I was getting upset about that? That is so dumb. Like, God's not going to provide enough food for three extra people. Well, look how he provided. There was plenty to eat. And so, I mean, it's a very simple thing, but it helped our kids have a category that life will not go as planned. God is faithful, and it's going to be a blast to see how God is going to provide in this uncertain situation, in this interruption of our plans, in our nice, neat, little, organized world. God breaks through, and he reveals himself. You know, again, those of us who don't know Christ, we have our plan. All I had my plan. This is where I was going. And boy, in my life, it was headed really bad. But praise God, he broke through my little plan and said, I've got something so much better for you, so much richer than you could even imagine if you will just trust me. Will you trust me to begin this relationship? Will you entrust yourself to my son so that you can even begin to know me? And then after that, he said, I've got a ride for you that you won't believe. And a lot of it is going to be interruptions in your little plans. And allow me to give you some of these great plans. So that's all I had. I'd be glad to, I hopefully there's questions or comments or ideas or, back there. Oh, yell it out, shout it out. Use that voice when you're mad at the kids for not closing the door. Close the door.
So you were talking about knowing your own temperament and yeah. Then later talking about refusal to sacrifice. My own temperament is very inward focused. I tend to be like la 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 in my brain all the time. Mm-hmm. My kids are like, mommy, 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 mommy. And it's like, I don't want to pay attention to you. Obviously, I'm reading a book.
Right.
Something that my husband's aunt has done that we just started noticing, she's got like a PhD in early childhood development, yada, yada, yada. And she responds to her children. She also has three. They're very close in age. They're much older than mine.
Okay.
And she'll say, okay, no problem. And that the way that she says it, it's not sarcastic. It's not like irritated.
Right.
It's, I recognize a need. Clearly, I don't want to do that. But you know what? It's no problem. Mm-hmm. And we talked to her about it, and basically it's like, yeah, that's what God says to me.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like, that's how I hear God saying to me, this is no problem.
Right.
And I'm going to do this for you. So something I have been trying, and it's not easy, but
no.
It is but it's good because it changes my mind in the moment.
Right, right.
Okay,
right.
No problem. Because if I don't say it in a nice way, the kids' faces are, like, clearly hurt.
My mom is mad at me. That she's resentful that I would come to her and ask for something. Yeah. Yeah.
What about when people undermine your efforts? You know, you were talking about look them in the eye and say thank you, or you need to apologize. And we've had that issue even in our own home group where I'm telling my three-year-old, like, you need to look them in the eye and say thank you, Miss Julie.
Right.
Miss Julie is like, oh, she doesn't need to. don't worry about it, sweetie, it's fine. Or, you know, you're like, you need to apologize. And the librarian says, it's no big deal. Kids tear up books all the time. And you're like, no, I want them to do this.
Right, I want you to say, well, thank you very much, because that is not a good thing to rip those library books. Sometimes in the moment I would say, no, I really need Kevin to say he's sorry. And then sometimes if they're in your home group, you can go back to them afterwards and say, you know, I appreciate you doing that, but for little Sally's sake, this is an issue that we've got going on. So I know one parent who told her kid, you know, you've been so bad, you can't go to Chris's house to play next time. So she purposely called Chris's mom and said, could you have Chris call to see if little Billy can come play? Oh no, little Billy, so they did. Oh, little Billy can't play today because he was bad and it was the consequence. Yeah, so yeah. Yeah, we got to work together on this. Yeah, but yeah, just go back and explain. And most people say, great, thanks for telling me, and we'll work together. And yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I know one of the things that I've really struggled with on this, or especially, not that my kids are that old, the oldest one's 6, but is we're also taught as parents, you know, be consistent.
Right.
Stick to your gun.
Absolutely.
And so it is really hard when you say, you have to put your gloves on to go outside,
right.
And they fight you. And
yeah.
In my head, I'm going, okay, well, do I be flexible and let them logically learn? But how do I do that without them thinking that by going, no, I don't want to,
right. They
get their way?
Right.
That's that back and forth is a real issue for me. And not that this has worked perfectly in our house at all, but I was talking to a friend about it, and she said somebody had suggested to her that they taught their kids they were allowed to appeal. So they could kindly ask,
yes.
You know, well, could we do it this way? You know, give some additional information that, you know, because if my gut reaction is to say,
right, I know.
No, we don't have time for that right now.
Right.
And they can say, but mom, we're trying to do this. So we have worked
That's
on
great.
That some to say, you know, okay, you can appeal. Mommy has a chance to change her mind without being inconsistent. But at the same time,
yeah. If
I say no again, you know,
right.
then
that's it.
Still
there's
what
no,
it is.
You cannot, there's no Supreme Court to appeal to. You
right.
got the Court of Appeals,
exactly.
We're done.
I
right.
get the firm authority. So
yeah.
In theory, I still love that idea. It's
right.
In practice, it's still in the works. But I liked that just to give myself
yeah.
an out without kicking myself later going, oh, was I being?
Why?
Was I
Why?
The flexibility
yeah.
okay? Was it not? Was it?
Yeah.
So anyway.
No, that's great, because I'm sure we all, why did I, in your head you're thinking, why did I say that? That was so stupid. I don't care if they use red ink instead of blue. Yeah, yeah, that's a pretty good practical way to do it, yeah. Or then sometimes I would say, you know what, that was really dumb on mom's part. It's not big of a deal whether you wear gloves or not. So I'm really sorry I made that rule. That was crazy. Go ahead and do what you want to do. So sometimes I just admit I was a knee-jerk reaction, and that was dumb. Yeah, my kids did hear that a lot. Well, that was pretty dumb, wasn't it? Yeah, mom was. So, yeah.
Okay, I feel like I have so many questions. Like, I just need like an hour. But I guess the first would be, you know, beside the Bible, is there a book that you could recommend? I mean, I know nothing's perfect, but.
Right. Melody, you know any? Because you taught first grade forever. I mean, some of those good books were How to Make Your Children, ones we liked, How to Make. What areas to hold firm to, what areas
yeah,
to be flexible.
Yeah, okay, without, like, getting into my entire life story. I mean, I'm very similar to you.
Right,
I would
we
like,
love to have fun.
I would like to have fun, like, 24 hours
yeah,
a day.
Right.
I have a kid who's completely lazy and doesn't follow through with anything.
Yeah.
And so it's too much work, so I'm just like, whatever.
Whatever, yeah.
And then the other thing is I feel like when, like, I try to apologize, because I make tons
right,
of mistakes.
Sure.
When I apologize, he's smart enough to, like, use that against me sometimes. And he, you know, like, I feel like I undermine myself
yeah.
all the time.
You know, that would be probably best to get a couple good friends that know your
okay.
kid, and say, okay, you know, here's the last couple situations, and they don't seem to be going well. Help me out here. What do you think? Or how, you know. Yeah, someone, again, that know you, know your kids, know the situation, and that will tell you what you don't want to hear. And, yeah, yeah. Were you thinking something, though?
Well, it seems like there's a big permissiveness going on in parenting.
Here. Okay.
I'm not loud enough.
Yeah. Melody's taught, how long did you teach first grade?
First and kindergarten, like 20 years.
So she's seen some things. But and three boys of her own, yeah.
Yeah, three boys in 4 years, like you, except you had four.
Yeah.
If you're having struggles with, like, permissiveness and just not holding the line and just getting to the point where you just finally get so angry to get control of the child, then I would recommend, like, LaHaye's, no.
There's that How to Make Your Children Mind Without Losing Yours. The heart thing?
The old, I just lost it.
Manipulative child, okay. It'll come back.
There's some things. Dobson.
Yeah.
Dare to discipline, so
okay.
There's so much permissiveness going on that it gets really cloudy who's winning and who's what. And
right.
You can't even talk about flexibility until you really have a structure where you're following through consistently on
right.
things that need to be followed through.
That's
a
good point.
Problem.
Yeah.
And then investment, if you're issues with that, I think
Campbell, How to Really Love Your Child
is
very good.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of. It's really good. So it depends on what you're in. I think Beverly LaHaye was good with the temperament, taking like temperament issues and how do you work with your child's temperament and how to get them to lean against their own bent.
Yeah.
And then having your own insight on your own temperament,
right.
which you were talking about.
Yeah.
That's
yeah, for like the super rigid kid that always has to play a game his way or he quits. How do you help them learn to be a little more flexible? You know, we don't always have to play the game. Whereas one kid in our neighborhood, if you didn't play the game just the way he wanted, he quit. It's like, that's not life. I hope you don't like that with your wife. Could be really ugly. Yeah. Did I interrupt you, Melody? Were you going to say more? Okay. Right.
And then you can see that you can parent each child a little bit
differently.
Because
yeah.
they have different issues. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where it isn't all black and white. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Laura.
Okay.
That's right.
My kids are really young. I have like a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old.
And they're cute, too.
One thing, thanks. One thing that's really confusing in terms of flexibility is my schedule.
Right.
And how many times a week do we go to different meetings and different events? And what is the, like, your kids look flexible if they feel safe in a secure schedule.
Right.
But then someone needs to meet with you and something's happening and... How do you show them, like,
yeah.
ministry and spiritual things are really important and they're worth sacrificing our schedule, but they're one and they don't,
right.
you know, they need a certain schedule and stuff.
Right,
so.
Right. And they're, that's hard. That's where you need the Holy Spirit and that's where you need friends. Because, again, it's the extremes are easy to identify. The person who's always out and the person who never goes out. And then how. I do remember, like, if I had promised, like, to play a game with one of our boys, I can remember doing this a lot. Like, I'd say, we are going to play Monopoly, and there'd be a phone call, and I'd pick it up. If it wasn't, like, a real urgent, I'd say, can I call you back in 20 minutes? Because I promised Kevin I would play Monopoly. Mm-hmm. And so when we get done with our Monopoly game, I'll call you back, and then I would hang up, play our game, and then call them back. So I think it becomes, you know, the needs of the other person, what's been going on, because at some point, I think, you've been gone a lot, and you got to say, nope, sorry, can't do it. And then we were really very militant about, like, our family nights and our dates with our kids. Those were really kind of non-negotiable. We would be inflexible. And somebody really, it had to be a real severe emergency. And family dinner was pretty sacred. And so there was some things already built into our schedule that gave them, I think, that sense of predictability and bedtime routines. So there were certain things that were pretty in place, and then we did a lot of stuff either late at night and we would do, it's like that thing, if you put the rocks in your schedule, then you put a lot of other crap around it. So we had some pretty firm family rocks that were relatively non-negotiable that then gave us to help our kids learn to be flexible in other areas. Yeah, so. But that's, again, ask people who know your kids and know your situation. We did one time do a 2-week schedule and gave it to a neutral party and said, this is what our 2 weeks look like. What do you think? And that's when we had all four kids. And we had purposed in our heart that if he said something was out of whack, we would change. And so because we weren't sure if we were being fair with our kids, that we did do that and said, you tell us what you think. and we respected this guy. And so that's another thing, like an out that we did to try to safeguard our desire to do.